There is a war going on for your mind. Industry insiders sling test tube babies to corporate crackheads. They flash logos and blast ghettos. Their embroidered neckties say, stop snitching. Conscious rappers and whistleblowers get snitches made of acupuncture needles and marionette strings. There is a war going on for your mind. Professional wrestlers and vice presidents want you to believe them. The desert sky is their blue screen. They superimpose explosions. They shout at you. Pay no attention to the men behind the barbed curtain, nor the craters beneath the draped flags. Those hoods are there for your protection, and the meteors these days are the size of corpses. There is a war going on for your mind.
We are the Insurgents.
And we are live this April 22nd, Wednesday. It's the InfoWarrior with Jason Burmis. Thank you for joining me this evening. I will be out tomorrow and Friday, hopefully back on Monday, taking a trip out to New York. We're going to have a two-hour news blitz slash phone call segment, and then we're going to do Mark Dice and his new anti-Illuminati book, Illuminati Fact and Fiction, in the third hour. I also want to talk about this article out of Esquire I discussed on the Alex Jones Show briefly today that, of course, lumps everybody who, quote-unquote, is a conspiracy theorist with 9/11 denial, Holocaust denial, moon fakery, you know, the New World Order's not real, and, you know, they try to say that the first blockbuster was the white supremacist epic Birth of a Nation. Again, they want to equate us with Nazis. Why people who love conspiracy theories are part of the problem. Remember, we're part of the problem. Conspiracies never happened. You know, they can have the House Select Intelligence Committee on assassinations and come to the conclusion that indeed a conspiracy was committed to kill Martin Luther King Jr., John F. Kennedy Jr., and Robert Kennedy, but they don't exist. And we're part of the problem for perpetuating the conspiracies actually happen. My word, don't people get charged with conspiracy all the time? Isn't that just daily? Isn't that in the law terminology? I'm pretty sure it's in there. I'm sure it doesn't just go with conspiracy theorist, as they'd like you to believe. So again, coming down on the culture of conspiracy, I guess, is what they like to call it. And they try to mix, again, angels and demons with white supremacy and 9/11 truth. I mean, the opening paragraph right here, and this guy, Stephen or Stefan, should be ashamed of himself. The difference between the millions obsessed with angels and demons and the whack jobs denying 9/11 and the Holocaust says a lot about Obama's hopes for a new era of responsibility. Meanwhile, it's all pro-Obama garbage. We love Obama. And this denying 9/11. No one has denied that 9/11 happened. No one denied that 9/11 existed. No one denied it took place. But you know what? They love to glom on to the Holocaust denial terminology. They love to bring in the white supremacy. They love it. And you know, by the way, they have links here. In fact, conspiracy theorists slash 9/11 deniers, and of course it links to our good friends at Popular Mechanics that did one of the most piss-poor debunking jobs of a subject ever possible with 9/11, even writing a book and really doing a disservice to the debunking community as horribly written and horribly fact-checked as it was. I mean, there's so many holes in that debunking that David Ray Griffin was able to do a whole book called Debunking the Debunkers. And, you know, I may not agree with everything David Ray Griffin has to say, but I do think that he's a lot more valid than these creeps that go out and just try to take the other side of everything. Everything's an accident. Everything's a coincidence. Everything's an intelligence failure. Nothing happens for any reasons. The government's always good. They've always got our best interests at heart. They're always working as hard as they can, but never against the populace. That could never happen. Governments throughout history have never oppressed the people. They've never incited the people into war with false flag terror events. They've never been tyrannical. They've never been dictatorial. I mean, give me a break. So we're going to really talk about that Esquire article with Mark Dice in about 2 hours, talk about his new book. And then I really want to focus on this NLE 09 exercise and this population sustainability that all the kids are talking about. It's the Info Warrior with Jason Burmis. We'll be back after this. PrisonPlanet.tv, Infowars.com.
trouble so hard. Ooh, Lord, my trouble so hard. Don't nobody know my trouble but God. Don't nobody know my trouble but God. Ooh, Lord, my trouble so hard. Ooh, Lord, my trouble so hard. Don't nobody know my trouble but God. Don't nobody know my trouble but God.
All right, folks, we are back, and we're going to be taking your calls. It's 866-582-9933. That's 866-582-9933. Now, I did a story last night, and we're going to get into the NLE 09 and these sustainability quotes. We'll probably play the Ted Turner clip I love so much again. But I'm hoping these guys will pull this up. We talked about these robo-penguins yesterday, okay? And there is this other company called Fresto out there that actually have, and if you type this in, Aqua Ray robots. And what these are basically stingrays. They have a very distinct look to them, and you would think that they were some kind of an animal. Literally, I mean, not that the robo-penguins, if we can pull up the robo-penguins too and maybe show that while I talk about it, don't look like an actual animal other than their creepy glowing eyes. I mean, it looks a lot like Batman 2. Yeah, there it is right there, the Fresto Aqua Ray. And if you're watching at PrisonPlanet.tv, we're going to play the video as I talk about it. But this thing is just amazing looking. I mean, you would not be able to tell if you were in an aquarium setting, other than the fact that on the right flipper of this thing, it says Fresto on it. But this isn't a living, breathing, aquatic organism. I guess not breathing, but you know what I mean. I mean, this thing looks incredible. It moves incredibly. It looks just like the thing that killed Steve Irwin without the spiky thing at the end. And I am telling you, we live in such a distinct time in history that is really unlike any other time before it, because the technology that we now possess, artificial intelligence is real. Right here I have a story about virtual reality. And how they're trying to use it, of course, to stop global warming. There's the propaganda. And how to learn how to change the clouds. But VR has really been on the shelf and probably classified to a certain extent since the 90s. Folks, do you remember that really crappy game system Nintendo tried to come out with the goggles? And had like just the red, the lines. I can't remember what it was called, but it was back in the 90s. And it was supposed to compete with, what was the first really big portable one outside? It was even before the Game Boy Advance. You know, it was way before the Game Boy Advance. It was kind of launched after the Game Boy, and it was this 3D thing. And it was basically VR at a very basic level. When I was on my senior trip, I went to Virginia Beach. I played VR. You know, it was me and another guy, and what you would do is you would stand on this thing that was kind of like a treadmill, and the helmets would come down, and you would have your hands in these things and like guns, and you would, when you were moving, walking forward, it would feel like you're walking forward because you're on a treadmill, and when you move your hands, there'd be sensors, so your hands would move in front of you, and you'd shoot, and when you would move your head, the camera was full 360 rotation in a 3D environment. Granted, the graphics were extremely crude. I would say, geez, what's a good example? Like Mech Assault bad, like first generation Mech Assault bad, really bad. But 3D environment, I'm shooting stuff, I feel like I'm in it. VR is here, AI is here, robots are here. Can we pull up the robo-penguin, guys? Can we get that robo-penguin? Because that thing is just like, I mean, literally looks like out of the Terminator with its skeleton-type structure, with its motion, with its own sonar capability so it doesn't bump into walls and other animals. Again, if the eyes weren't glowing and you were at a aquarium and you were just, you know, in your normal position, generally where you would be at one of these things, there's no way you could distinguish this from a live animal. And so, I mean, literally, you know, again, yesterday at MSN.com, what was the picture of? It was of the microchip, this little microchip that we're all going to be taking, apparently. One of the most, the 10 most important inventions of the next 10 years, and it was actually 20, but the headline, you know, they like the number 10 a little bit better. And again, you see this same picture of this small microchip in the MIAC report. If you talk bad about this microchip or RFID tags in general, you're probably a right-wing extremist militia member who's willing to shoot cops in the face at a moment's notice. And that's what they're training people to believe. And not only that, but you're also probably associated with white supremacist groups like, Stormfront, and you love Birth of a Nation. And that's where the nexus point in this Esquire article is. It's all about these little nexus points. So how does that nexus in to these drills? Well, of course, these drills are headed up by FEMA. They talk about the fusion of local, federal, public, private, even tribal and international organizations. And remember, this terrorist attack has already happened overseas. That's why the United Kingdom, Mexico, Canada, Australia are involved. And then you have the Prime Minister of Australia wheeling out almost the exact same thing that Obama is trying to wheel out in a domestic civilian security force. He's already got the brute force guys. Now, I was going to vet those videos, but we ended up going to dinner with Alex, so I didn't make it to get to go through the brute force videos. But they've already got this really crazy kind of like militarized police unit on the streets. And now he's trying to build a civilian course just like Obama is. When they're telling you it's a global new deal, they're not lying. When Gordon Brown gets up at the G20 and says it's an emerging new world order, that's what it is. Wake up. Wake up. And when they say that they're going to kill or sustain the population, they don't say kill. See, kill is too hard of a word. Kill. Well, that sounds bad. Let's use the word sustainability. Sustainability sounds good. In fact, let's pull up so we can have it for the next segment. Ted Turner and a sustainability quote. You know, Ted Turner, not a good man. Definitely. Oh, Bad News Brown. You got it for me? Can we just hit play? We got 5 minutes, so you got to cue it up. Hit it.
Credit crisis we're in now.
You know, I think it's a mess.
And why is it a mess?
Well, because I think what happened is people were borrowing too much money on their houses.
Clearly they're doing that.
I don't. My
yeah,
house
he's going to find
for.
The actual spot right if there.
We,
I mean, that's,
we have to mobilize. This
okay,
is
yeah, bring
it
back.
It
bring it back. Bring it back.
And
about
what's possible? Tell me what's
it's
possible to do
that in 15 or 20 years. We could completely redo it if we have to mobilize. This is how important it is, and how important that we do it quickly. We have to mobilize the same way we did when we entered World War II in 1941. We have to fully mobilize everything we have and put it into changing the energy system over. And not just here in the United States, but all over the world. It's going to be the biggest business project in the history of the world. Fortunes, billions of dollars are going to be made. Hundreds of thousands of people are going to be employed. We're going to have clean air. We're going to have so many benefits from it. It's not going to cost us anything once we get going with it. It's not going to cost us anything. Only the people that don't understand it think it's going to... Not doing it will be catastrophic. We'll have 8 degrees, we'll be 8 degrees hotter in 30 or 40 years, and basically none of the crops will grow, most of the people will have died, and the rest of us will be cannibals, civilization will have broken down, what the few people that are left will be living in a failed state like Somalia or Sudan, and living conditions will be intolerable. The droughts will be so bad there'll be no more corn growing. Not doing it is suicide. Just like dropping bombs on each other, nuclear weapons is suicide. So we've got to stop doing the two suicidal things, which are hanging on to our nuclear weapons
and global emissions.
And then after that, we've got to stabilize the population. When I was born,
what's wrong with the population? I mean,
with too many people. That's why we have global warming. We have global warming because too many people are using too much stuff.
Stop it right there. Okay, so there's too many people on the earth, and that's why you have people like this lobbyist over in Australia. Remember, we're having civilian security forces there. We're lockstep with this global new deal. We're going to take part in this NLE09 exercise, and we're thinking, you know what? Population sustainability over in Australia. Let's take the population from the 22 million to 7 million. Yeah, that sounds about right. Let's wipe out two-thirds of the people in Australia. Yeah, that'll work. And then maybe Ted Turner will stop complaining about global warming. There's too many people using too much stuff. You'll be in a failed state like Somalia as a cannibal after y'all die. It's like nuclear war. Talk about fear-mongering. Talk about Johnny Nonsense. That's what that statement is all about. Johnny Nonsense, fear, and control. And then you have Gordon Brown's big buddy over in the National Sustainable Society. Remember, Gordon Brown is a member. His name is Jonathan Porritt, and he wants to take down the population in the UK to 30 million. Only 70 million people there. You only got to kill over 50 million or 50% of the populace. You know, only 40 mil have to go. That's 40 million, that's nothing. We'll just make one-child policies, we'll sterilize the women, then we'll cause mass plagues. No big deal. We'll wipe that population clean right out. I mean, give me a break. How can people not see through this? And all over the news, it's Obama pushes renewable energy climate change laws. I know, I've been talking about it. Congress has set greenhouse gas limits deemed crucial for the success of global talks on climate change. It's all about globalism. Global talks on climate change. And then here it is right here. Obama climate chief, U.S. law vital to the global deal. Remember, his climate chief or climate czar is another member of the World Sustainable Society with our buddy Gordon Brown. And she wants global governance. She pushes for it. But Obama doesn't see a problem with that because he's a tool of the globalist. UN calls at climate talks for G8 to do more. Again, more about globalism. And folks, you want to pay a carbon tax? You want to not be able to burn firewood? You don't want AC in your car? This is what they're talking about with this new green movement. It's the InfoWarrior with Jason Burmis. We'll be back after this. PrisonPlanet.tv, InfoWars.com.
Well, come on, all of you big, strong men. Uncle Sam needs your help again. Got himself in a terrible jam way down yonder in Vietnam. Put down your books and pick up a gun. We're gonna have a whole lot of fun. And it's one, two, three. What are we fighting for? Don't ask me, I don't give a damn. The next stop is Vietnam. And it's five, six, seven. Open up the pearly gates. Well, there ain't no time to wonder why. Woo-hoo, we're all gonna die.
All right, folks, we are back. And I promised I'd go to your calls. The call in line is 866-582-9933. Let's go to our first caller, Ryan in Montreal. You're on the line, sir.
Hi. Actually, it's Brian, but that's all right.
Okay.
How are you, Jason?
I'm all right.
I heard you earlier today talking about what was happening in Australia with the youth, the plans they have for the youth. Up here in Canada, I was checking it out. I had called a while ago to tell you about a guy named Rudy R. Griffith that had written a book promoting that up here in Canada, and just recently I found out that Pierre Trudeau's son, Justin Trudeau, who's a MP here in Montreal, he's introduced a bill, M-299, for a national voluntary service policy to be studied.
Yeah, no, it's all about the Global New Deal, man. I mean, there's a reason that Canada, Mexico, the United Kingdom, and Australia are taking part in this FEMA drill against terrorism. It's because they're part of the globalist plan. They are the main infrastructure for this new world order archetype situation. And there's no doubt that's why you're seeing a civilian security force over in Australia. Don't be surprised when you see one pushed over in Canada.
Yeah, exactly. And I also wanted to let you guys know that I've been doing some research up here as far as how far I could see how honest the Canadian government was when it came to the chemtrail question. And actually, I was surprised. I found quite a few sites that talk about their weather modification programs that they're running.
Really?
Like they're not as shy.
Well, what are they saying about it? Are they saying that they're shooting pollutants into the air to block the sun's rays?
Of course, they're not going to be completely honest about what they're doing, but they come. It's always the same propaganda with the way that they come across, that it's for our benefit and that you might not fully understand what they're doing, but they know what's best and we don't. And,
and do they say it's to fight global warming?
Yeah, because everything up here in Canada, it's amazing how many things pass, and it's things that you would consider referendum-worthy, asking the public, like in 2008 when they signed a military agreement there so that we could invade each other. Mm-hmm. There's never an asking of the public. They just pass this stuff like they do with the European Union stuff. They just push it through, you know?
Yeah, no, it's their motto, where they'll build the infrastructure first and then kind of pass the legislation as they go along. I thank you for the call, Brian. Let's go to lots of Canadian callers. Artem in Montreal. Artem, you're on the air.
Hi, Jason.
Hello?
Happy Earth Day. Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Hi, Jason. Happy Earth Day, and let's hope we save the planet from the New World Order.
I agree.
So I would like to weigh in on the subject that has been discussed a few times on Alex's show, and that's vaccines and autism and the link between the two.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's true that there has been a link between vaccines, but with the high functioning cases, it's something else altogether. Because basically what they're doing is they're expanding the autism spectrum to include what used to be normal. And I'm suspecting that there must be some kind of eugenics program behind it, because the establishment is now saying that Thomas Jefferson had it. They say Thomas Jefferson was autistic. And essentially, if you exhibit like any symptoms of nonconformity, like if you don't follow trends, if you don't just blindly imitate others, as a child, they label you as autistic.
Well, there's also, you know, Asperger's that's out there, that's a separate type of autism, or maybe a lighter type. And, you know, I'm saying is that it has gone up significantly since I was even a kid. I mean, Alex is right when he, you know, looks at all these people that would look normal. They don't have Down syndrome. You know, their autism only stems from after these vaccinations when they're 3 or 4. Of course it's a eugenics program. I mean, what else could it be? I thank you for the call. I mean, folks, when you put simian virus 40 in the polio vaccinations, and it's a cancer virus that causes cancer in apes and other hominids, there's a eugenics program going on. When you're giving people syphilis during the Tuskegee experiments, guess what? It's a eugenics program. When you're putting mercury not only in the vaccinations, but in the high fructose corn syrup, and there's drugs tainting all of the drinking water, guess what? It's a eugenics program. I mean, you know, Endgame really does sum it up. These people are mad with power. They really do believe that they're going to be able to live forever. Just type in life extension technology. See what they're doing with mice. See what's openly out there. But they don't want that for you and me. They don't want us to be cured of disease. They see us as the cancer, the disease on the earth. And we have to get rid of 80% of us before they can really have their true coming out party as the gods they believe they are.
I never remorse for you, no letters endorsing you. Pole position in the coffin is what is costing you. The caucus bosses who control the fortunes, through the mortgages of a culture with losses through and through.
But it's the rebel arms.
Godspeed with devil's charm. The shit made get switch blades in every arm. And this way we ex-nay on any harm. Cause snakes play and fakes lay like hidden bombs. We march in unison. The soul is true within eternal missions with just a lifetime to do it in.
Stronghold Senate with trash with baton. The rebel arms swarm and form like Voltron. Slash your old beast, you heard Mark of the East. Running through cop land screaming, fuck the police. Hormones in the water, they acting out of order like a pack of rabid wolves. They lambs for the slaughter. Crush your mandible, rip the drums like animal. Eat them seeds, they my own kind, I'm a cannibal.
All right, we are back. Haters want to shoot me. And we're just going to jump right back into calls. Tom is on the line. Tom in New York, you're on the air.
Hey, Jason. Calling to ask you questions about what you think about the Zeitgeist movement.
Well, the movement, I really don't care for, because it's a lot of, you know, Johnny nonsense. Let's be honest. Are we ever really going to have a world with no government? Okay, let's look at it in its face. First of all, I really enjoyed the first picture. I think the first one is very solid. I think Zeitgeist Addendum, the first hour, is excellent. The second hour is just very hard for me to watch because it just spews a lot of lies. To think that we're going to be able to live in this society where apparently we're all going to have similar type houses, we're going to all have this technology, this electromagnetic trains, and we're going to be able to go from one place to another in minutes, and everybody's going to be peaceful. Dude, that's not human nature. It's not just... He always says that scarcity is the issue and profit is the issue. The problem is that when you get down to it, if everybody still is taken care of and everybody is provided for, people are still going to want to screw your wife. They're still going to want to drive your car. You know, bad people are still going to want to rape your daughter. You know, they're humanity. And then he says, you know, like in the interview with Jones, he says, well, that abhorrent behavior is there, but those people just have to be re-educated. And this guy is also, you know, in approval for kind of like this worldwide mind where computers are supposed to make decisions. And all of that to me is just a total and complete trap. It sounds great on the surface. Everybody wants to live in a, you know, hippie hugging bunch world where we love each other and, you know, everything's taken care of and we're singing our praises and nobody has to work because we can all do what we want. We can be free thinkers and artists. I just don't think it's humanity, man. I think that's a different species. It's not human beings.
Yeah, you know what? I kind of was uncomfortable after watching his second video also. Mm-hmm. I thought the addendum would be more of, you know, more of him showing how corrupt our government was.
Mm-hmm.
But it just
No, he's an apologist. He thinks that this is another thing I really have a problem with. He believes that they're going to have to join us. Now, on its surface, what he presents in the second zeitgeist is really the quote-unquote globalist or new world order dream, you know, a one world society where everybody's the same and they're all controlled. I mean, so they're selling you the utopian one world society that the elite talk about, but that's only the society for them. Their utopian one world society, there's a slave class, which is us, under them, and we only have the illusion of freedom. And anyway, that's after they kill 80% of us. And then he also makes a big deal about religion in his movies. And personally, I'm not a religious guy. But the people at the top, Tom, they're religious. They're into the occult. They're into that sun worship he talks about in the first zeitgeist. You know, they're members of the Bohemian Grove. So I always say to myself, well, you know what? Whether or not you're religious, you can't really say that religion is this big problem because the people at the top are very religious, and they also happen to be the most powerful people in the world. And not only are they very religious, they act like they're Christian conservatives so they can kind of, you know, lead the mass sheep out there with those religions. But then they're into this totally other bizarre religion, the occult, which, you know, its meaning is hidden. And even higher than that, some of them are very much so Luciferian and believe the ends justifies the means. So to me, you know, Zeitgeist is a great opener to bring people into the movement, the first one. I think the second one is a lot of bait and switch. I tried to get Peter Joseph on, by the way, and he refused to come on the program. I tried to get him on for a full 2 hours, and I actually got into an email discussion with his assistant or whatever, and she made it very clear that, you know, I'm a nut job because I believe in the New World Order, and we're all profiteers here at, you know, at InfoWars, and that's the only reason we do this, and we're big fear-mongers. You know, it's not that we're trying to report the news, warn people, and really articulate what dire trouble we're in. It's that, you know, we're profiteers and fear-mongers, and we just don't want to, you know, listen to the Zeitgeist thing. Look, if it was valid, those technologies are valid. I'm all for solar energy. You know what I mean? I'm all for electromagnetics being used. I'm all for that zero-point stuff. Please, let's bring it in. It's here. The elite's not going to do that. With these carbon taxes and these carbon emissions, they're going to use the same technology, and they're going to squeeze the populace so that our standard of living goes down. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, I think I summed it up. Anything else, man?
Well, just the fact that I'm pretty new to this, and I'm, you know, that's why I asked the question about Zeitgeist, and, you know, I just started listening to you guys like 2 days ago.
Oh, okay. All right. Let me tell you some movies that I do recommend then. All right. Here are some movies that you can take home to the bank that have some really great information in them. My film, Loose Change Final Cut. My film, Fabled Enemies. Aaron Russo's film, America Freedom to Fascism. If you want to know a little bit more about the occult aspects, Alex Jones' films, Order of Death and Martial Law, Rise of the Police State. I mean, those films right there should really get you started. They have a great basis. There's a lot of other good docs out there, kind of lower level stuff, not as hardcore. But watch those ones and you'll get a good feel about 9/11 and the people that not only orchestrated 9/11 but who are the power elite at the tops.
Well, I kind of have that figured out. I mean, I kind of have the figured out who really runs the country, because really the bankers and the elite.
And what'd you do? You came across the Obama deception or something? Someone gave you that?
The Obama deception. I ended up watching on YouTube. They have a broken up version of it, like 9 or 12 8 parts, or something like that.
So was that your first experience? What, one of your friends sent you that, and that kind of drove you into Zeitgeist and some of this other stuff?
Actually, my first experience in this was actually the coffins and the camp. Somebody showed me videos of the coffins and the FEMA camps. Mm-hmm.
And you got to watch out for some of those, because some of those aren't really mass graves. I mean, they're graves for the soldiers, and some of them are, I don't know, Paul, what are you pointing at? Oh, okay. All right, never mind. Anyway, some of them are mass graves. Some of them are not. Some of those plastic coffins, there's someone out there debunking them. Look, FEMA centers do exist. I thank you for the call, Tom. They're out there, this new drill, this NLE-09. Remember, anything can be a FEMA center or a FEMA camp. It's a makeshift camp. It's the military coming in, declaring martial law, doing mass roundups on quarantines, gun confiscations. All right, let's go to Kathy in California. Kathy, you're online.
Yes. Hi, Jason. How are you today?
Good.
I enjoyed your listening to your show, and I think it's a wonderful way to wake people up in on this on many different issues that we're facing today. My big thing is chemtrails.
Hmm. Oh, did we drop her? All right, we dropped Kathy up. Yep. All right, let's go to Brent in New York. Sorry about that, Kathy. Brent, you're on the line.
Jason, how you doing?
I'm all right.
Nice to talk to you, my man. For our first time caller, I listen to you and Alex Jones all the time, and subscriber to the PrisonPlanet.tv website.
Awesome.
And been pretty much woke since America Destroyed by Design. But I just wanted to say I called them because I wanted to basically say that actually to hit on something you spoke about with the last caller pertaining mm-hmm. to like religion and how you know a lot of these people. The so-called elites, I don't like to call them that because it gives them credit for, you know, and not really elite, they're scumbags, but how a lot of them are into the occult and by night, but by day, they pose as Christian conservatives and all this other stuff that you just hit on.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to kind of uncover that aspect of it. You know, we know, you know, this whole New World Order thing, but we really don't talk about much how the church plays into that and how it's integral to them and how the Pope is pushing for the New World Order.
Oh, absolutely.
And a lot of people just don't really appreciate and see how, you know, the agenda of these so-called elitists and bankers ties into the agenda of not just the politicians, but the clergy, you know, and a lot of these people. And
yeah, well, first of all, whenever religion and sir, if you could just turn off that radio, whenever religion starts to become more consolidated and controlled, more the power structure takes more advantage. It becomes more and more corrupt. And,
right.
You know, that's obviously going to happen with the Catholic Church. But then again, at the top, these guys have all been infiltrated by these occultists. And, you know, some of the modern examples now, and these are just the modern examples, are the Bush family. You know, these guys go to the Bohemian Grove. They're recruited young, generationally, into Skull and Bones when they're still of college age. They're kind of introduced to this stuff if they're newbies and whatnot. And it progresses. You know, if you look at Hitler and his, you know, rise to power. He absolutely believed in the occult. The SS logos, the swastika, a sun symbol. He believed that stuff brought him power.
Right.
Power.
And most of them do.
Yeah, and exactly, most of them do. I mean, Tony Blair is open in the fact that he does these weird rituals, and all you have to do is open up a Bohemian Grove annal, and we're going to do that really soon here. We're going to open up the annal. I'm going to spend a full 3 hours with it. I'm going to wear my owl t-shirt and my Bohemian Grove hat, and we're just going to spend, I think we're going to do it this summer, right when the grove starts to meet, and really break it open. But this occultic nature, folks, if religion means nothing, then why are these people doing weird rituals in the woods? Obviously, they believe it does something. And they also happen to be the most powerful people in the world. So, you know, I'm not saying the occult works. I'm not saying that Satanism works. I'm saying that the people who are at the top are into that, and they do believe that those rituals work. They do believe in things like astrology. You know, Nancy Reagan was huge into astrology. She used to look into it all the time for Ronnie. And Ronald Reagan was a big Bohemian Grover. Even those who are reluctant are forced to go. People that aren't into the occult who are working for the establishment. People like Nixon or perhaps maybe Jimmy Carter. But then you have the other people that revel in it and love it and openly talk about it in their autobiographies, such as Helmut Schmidt from Germany, the former chancellor there. So there's definitely something going on there. And if people want to just poo-poo that and act like it doesn't exist, I feel like that's what Zeitgeist does, and it's very dishonest. Thank you for the call, Brent. All right, let's jump to Cliff in Colorado. Cliff, you're on the air.
Hey, Jason.
How you doing, sir?
Good. Thanks for the interview with Jeffrey Grubb.
Oh, no problem. That was a really good interview. Corporatism, The Private Army of the New World Order is the book, and he was really, really enjoyable.
Great book. I'd like to recommend Sophia Solstrom. I mean, Smallstrom. Smallstorm, I'm sorry. I always mess up her last name. I'd like to recommend Sophia Smallstorm on chemtrails.
Uh-huh.
May I read a seven-sentence quote of hers?
Sure, go for it.
This is out of the Idaho Observer. The chemtrail spraying is part of an integrated atmospheric weapon system. Though it seems the program is currently about weather modification, the aerosols contain nano-engineered biologics or weaponized parasites. According to those who have done the research, we are virtually all infected. Perhaps seeded would be a better word. The mix of engineered parasites, pathogens, toxic heavy metals, and nanobots is designed to assemble within us to create a microchipped terrain. Never mind the dog and pony show discussion about future RFID tags. It's already done.
You know, I've heard that theory, and, you know, I don't know whether that's happening. I mean, is it plausible? It's plausible. Is it probable? I don't know if it's probable. I know I've heard a lot out there that, you know, the HARP program is here to harness those little nanobots. What I can say is that one of the public programs they have is a thing called Smart Dust, where this dust is actually able to make an electromagnetic web, and you can't really see it. It's nanoparticles, and it will grid out the entire area, and then it transmits that information to a database somewhere where they can basically map out the terrain and any life forms in there. So is it probable? I don't know. Is it plausible? It's definitely plausible. Cliff, I thank you for the call. Let's go to Forrest in Texas. Forrest, how you doing tonight? Yes, sir.
Well, yeah, I just have a couple quick comments, and I don't want to get into something that's kind of heavy.
Okay.
There truly is a war on people, for people's minds. I mean, I was watching this, like, really entertaining, like, funny movie at the movie theater called Monsters vs. Aliens. It was in 3D. Mm-hmm. And then they even brought in the whole global warming scam. They kind of brought that in there. And, mm-hmm. and if I had known better, I probably would have, you know, just been further brainwashed.
Yeah, and it's a children's movie, so it's really there to acclimate the kids even further into climate change and global warming and teach them that they're the bad ones.
Yeah, yeah. And I want to talk about ways we can protect ourselves against the eugenicists poisoning the populace and the environment.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that the Native Americans do is they go in sweat lodges and they sweat out toxins, and niacin is a D3 vitamin, and it like helps the body get rid of toxins, and it cleans out the liver, and then all the fine health and wellness products that are advertised on GCN and on the shows that y'all do. And mm-hmm. I want to talk about Len Horowitz and what he was talking about in regards to Dr. Moto. Well, there was a study done with water and how when we send out good thoughts, and it has to do with quantum physics, when we send out good thoughts, it's been documented that molecules can get affected to be cleansed and to actually purify oneself. So
it's kind of like that secret mentality or the law of attraction, where you can really will things into reality, and it's not just willing it. I mean, it's more than that, but the law of attraction, in my opinion, is definitely real. If it actually works like some of these people say it does, I'm not quite sure. But it's definitely there, and it's definitely worth looking into. I thank you for the call, Forrest. All right, let's go to Rich in Georgia. Rich, you're on the line. Yes, sir.
Hey, I was just wondering if you saw the video that y'all had posted earlier, or someone had posted in a comment earlier on Infowars.com about the plastic caskets down here in Conyers, Georgia.
Yeah, you know what? Is that the one by, like, the Freedom Fighter show or something like that?
Yeah, something like that.
I watched the first 3 or 4 minutes of it, and yeah, I think I've actually been on that radio show, Freedom Fighter Radio or whatever. I think I've been on it a few times. Those guys are really nice guys, and I think that they're genuinely trying to do real research. I forget what the gist was. They basically go talk to somebody who's worked there for 14 or 15 years, and they're by the plastic coffin liners. And what does he say that they're for?
Well, he says that they're just liners just for the different cemeteries and, I guess, funeral parlors around the country that they supply these caskets to, but he also mentioned something about a big military grave that's being built out in Arizona.
And so he's saying it's not all false, but the ones that they're showing on television aren't the ones that he thinks that they're going to use for mass graves.
Well, he claims that the ones that he, the company he works for, is not connected to FEMA. He didn't mention anything about the CDC, but you know, out here in Atlanta, I wouldn't suspect that he would know about what kind of contracting they're doing as far as that goes either. But you know, it definitely, he was a production supervisor. I think the company was called Spectre.
All right, man, I'll look into it. I did watch part of that video, and I am, you know, anything to do with these FEMA camps or the mass graves, we have to vet extra carefully. It's the Info Warrior with Jason Burmis. We're going to continue to take your calls, 866-582-9933. We'll be back after these messages. Taking your calls all through the next hour, and then we're going to have Mark Dice on to discuss his new book, Illuminati, Fact or Fiction. It's 866-582-9933. Let's go to Kathy in California. She dropped earlier. She's back.
Yeah, hi, Jason. I know what, I heard a click, and so I was off. So anyway, I'm with the L.A. Chemtrail Meetup. I'm a meetup organizer for the Los Angeles ChemtrailMeetup.com, and we're planning an event for World Fest Earth Day for Saturday, May 16th. It will be at the Woodley Park. I have Gabe's DVDs on Skylines. It's by Deborah Whitman in Davis, California, where they had a city council hearing on this weather modification.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a fast, and also we'll be having aerosol crime tapes from Carnicom. And we'll have our flyers of for the chemtrails on, and plus I have chemtrail stickers and buttons, and I have two banners for.
Excellent, Kathy. Is there a website people can go to so they can go help?
Well, they can go to the, if they want to find further, they go to the Los Angeles Chemtrail Meetup.com. And I just want to tell you the two weather modification bills that are in Congress. Can I do that?
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, it's U.S. Senate Bill 1807.
Mm-hmm.
And U.S. House Bill is 3445, and Climate Security Act of 2008.
All right, we'll check those out, and we'll definitely keep an eye on them. I thank you for the call, Kathy. Yeah, I mean, they're pushing full force so that they can geoengineer the planet while they charge you a carbon tax and really take away your nutrition. I mean, all right, you're blocking the sun. The sun gives life to the earth. You need the sun to stay happy. It gives you vitamin D. It actually gives you the ability to feel good, release a few endorphins here and there. It also gives you the ability to stay healthy. Without the sun, plants will not grow. Livestock will die. All right? I mean, the bottom line is it'll be unhealthy if it does survive. And they're just like, we're going to block the sun. It's too hot. And if we don't do this, it'll go up 10 or 15 degrees in the next 30 years. And cannibalism all over the country. We'll be in failed states like Somalia. As if. I mean, the fear-mongering has gotten on to another level. And that is so they can pass their little carbon emissions laws, and I mean, it's just, it's so beyond anything. Meanwhile, I have this article in front of me. I touched on it really early today over on the Jones Show. Apparently, we can turn carbon dioxide into eco-friendly biofuels now. Singaporean researchers at the Institute of Bioengineering and Nanotechnology have devised a way to convert carbon dioxide into clean-burning biofuel methanol using a safe, non-toxic process. Has mankind defeated the final boss of global warming? Remember, first it was chlorofluorocarbons, ooh, it's hairspray, and now it's carbon dioxide. And now carbon dioxide can become energy. So that doesn't make a lot of sense that it's a poison, does it? I don't know, you guys will believe anything. You're the American public. You're the world populace. You're the elite sheeple. That's how they feel about you. We'll be back after this. It's the Info Warrior with Jason Burmis, PrisonPlan.tv, Infowars.com. Standing on the top of their own graves, wondering when Jesus comes, are they gonna be saved? Cruelty to the winner, bishop tells the king his lies. Maybe you're a mourner, maybe you deserve to die. They were crying when their sons left. God, the Info Warrior with Jason Burmis, and we're going to just shoot right through your calls. The call line is 866-582-9933. Before we go to the first caller this segment, I want to make a point to say that, hey, Apple's still doing all right with their little iPhones and their iPods. Profits are better than expected, huh? Apple Inc.'s quarterly profits soared past Wall Street's expectations on strong sales of iPhones and iPods, underscoring the popularity of the company's relatively expensive products, even in the midst of a weak economy. You think we're brainwashed? You think I'm joking when I say we have an iPod society, an iPhone-rich application society that doesn't care about anything else other than the TV shows they watch and the sports they adore? Do you think there's a problem here when they can charge you $600 for a phone and everybody buys it? And they're so zoned into it like a zombie, like it's the most important and most precious thing in the whole wide world. All right, let's go to Autumn in Minnesota. Autumn, you're on the line.
Hi, Jason. I thought it was important to let the people know what the definition of a cult means.
Sure.
It doesn't mean anything like satanic or... of that factor, all it means is
no, it's hidden knowledge. Yeah, it's
hidden knowledge. And astrology is not necessarily a bad thing, and especially when the reason why it was so suppressed in the first place is when they changed the law of time. They changed it from the lunar cycle, the moon cycle. It follows by a woman's fertility monthly. And when you get messed up people's time, they call it the error in time. Mm-hmm. And that if people want to get back to natural living, the first thing they need to do is go back to natural time.
Mm-hmm. And so what is natural time?
I just thought it was important for people to know that.
Well, I do try to make the distinction out there between the occult and Satanism. I say some of the higher people are definitely into Luciferianism, are into do as thou wilt. Some of them are just into the occult or hidden knowledge. A lot of them are into earth worship, Babylon, Gaia worship, that sort of thing. And they all are different flavors. And,
right.
You know, so I shouldn't maybe lump them all together, but I do lump them all together in the fact that these people say they're outwardly Christian conservatives, and then they're all these different flavors of something else.
But, like, that's the same thing with, like, there's a complete difference between magic and sorcery. Sorcery is controlling people, the minds of people.
Mm-hmm.
That is.
Yeah, but you know what? People
magic
will also
is something
give...
that, if you look back on it, was a healing ritual.
Well, I mean, even if you look at, for instance, Alex Jones's Order of Death, you know, every year over at the Bohemian Grove, there is a sect of white witches out there, people who believe in white magic versus black magic, like there's these two separate schools of magic that go out and do these rituals and ceremonies of the Grove to protest what's going on inside the Grove. They think with their white magic, they're going to be able to combat their black magic. I just like to point out that people do believe this. You know, it's not just the goth kid in high school who's never going to get laid that believes in this stuff. It's actually the elites of the world, the ones posing next to your pastor, your minister, your pope. I thank you for the call. You got it. We're going to go to Jim, Charlie, and others on the other side. You know, I'm not trying to be controversial with that subject matter. I know there are a lot of people out there that listen that aren't Christian, that are maybe into the occult, that are into astrology, that are into that sort of thing. Hey, I believe in freedom of religion. I just don't believe in hypocrisy. And I do find it rather interesting that the elite of the world, the who's who, are into this stuff. I always thought it was hokey nonsense. I never believed any of it. But you read their annals, you read their writings, you watch the videos, and it is very apparent they believe in it. When you see that skull and bones ritual where they're doing a mock sacrifice of a girl and getting into a coffin naked, there has to be something behind that. It's the Info Warrior. We'll be back after this.
Drifting along in the same stale shoes.
Rush through these callers. I'm spending a lot of time with each one, but some good points. Jim in Arkansas, you're on the line.
Hi, Jason.
Hello.
Late last week, I guess it was Alex, made a point of sirens going off in major cities for whatever reason. I don't know if you guys know it, here in Little Rock, they've been doing it as a test, at least that's the premise, at noon Wednesday, and I'm talking about since the mid-60s.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if that has any bearing.
Do they say why they do it? They do it at noon every day or just on Wednesdays?
No, noon every Wednesday.
Uh-huh. And they don't say why? Because, I come from a small town, and I'd hear the fire alarm go off, and all of a sudden the fire trucks would be going and that sort of thing. Never had a daily drill or a weekly. Yeah, no, I've never even heard anything like that. And they don't say what it's for, and you don't see any kind of like...
A test of the system is the premise.
It's just a test of the emergency system in case something goes wrong. That's it?
Tornado siren, right.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know if that's necessarily evil. I mean, will they co-opt that? Well, in these drills, I mean, obviously they're going to use as much local government as you can. Now, sure, if they're going to herd people into facilities, most people's, nuclear bunker back in the 80s was the local high school, so they may use the local high school as one of these places. I remember... back in 03-04, when I was working in this restaurant, one of the people's daughters was taken to the local sheriff's department on a bus for a FEMA drill where they were given a mock vaccination and then, herded into a security center afterwards. And I was just like, when this person's telling me this, and I'm like, you let your kids do this? And she's acting like it's a good thing. And she's like, well, this is something that they may have to deal with in their lifetime. Terrorism is real. And I'm just like... puking in my mouth, but I don't know if I necessarily, think there's anything devious going on with your air raid science.
I thought maybe that was more informational for the listeners than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let me switch topics here. Do you guys know of a website that has the voting records of the senators and representatives on different bills?
I've been trying to research that.
Mm-hmm. I would love to see the information that would provide.
That is a good question. You know what you should do? You should try to go, instead of trying to look for a broad website like that, search by individual. If you're looking for a certain person, I'm sure that somebody has their voting record online somewhere. So try to use individual searches for certain congressmen or women or senators and whatnot instead of trying to look for broad searches, and I bet you'll come across that information. I thank you for the call, Jim. Let's jump to Charlie in Kentucky. Charlie, you're on the line. Yes, sir.
Hey, Jason, how's it going, man?
Good, man.
Hey, I just want to call in with the other part of the chemtrail equation beyond what Scott is telling you about these turbo fan engines.
Okay.
And that is that, moisture in suspension in the air is humidity, mm-hmm. and it will condense out of the air based mm-hmm. on temperature and pressure. And that's what those turbofan motors provide, is the proper temperature and pressure in a given humidity to condense the water out of the air, and it reaches a dew point.
Mm-hmm.
That leaves the trail.
So you're in agreement with Scott. You agree with him.
Well, I do to that point, but what he doesn't follow up with is the fact that conditions were appropriate before the jet traveled through that space mm-hmm. for the air to be in suspension or for the moisture to be in suspension in the air. As soon as the jet leaves the space, conditions are then appropriate for the moisture to return to its suspended state in the air.
So in other words, what you're trying to say is it should have that trail where it follows the plane slowly and then dissipates as the plane moves, and it shouldn't
exactly.
have these long lines that stick out there.
And spread out and fan out and settle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you think that's dissipate. The big difference?
That's the difference. When the trail doesn't dissipate and go back to the state it was before the jet traveled through that space and created the conditions for dew point,
mm-hmm.
well, then there's something else going on. He didn't, well, you know, the jet doesn't alter the entire upper atmosphere.
Well, I'm really in agreement with you, Charlie. I come at it from your perspective, but at the same time, you know, the guy calls in, and I'm going to let him speak, and, you know, he seems like a genuine truther. He just doesn't agree with us on this issue. You know, could we be wrong? You know, I've been wrong before. I'm a human being. I'm not perfect, but I really don't believe, you know, for instance, he also says that, yeah, the geoengineering may be going on, but it's not going on through this, and then he'll say that these planes aren't running patterns. They're just waiting to go onto a runway or a jetway to land.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can clearly see in a lot of these cases that they are running patterns, and they're not, you know, sitting by a jetway. And
yeah,
thank you for the call, Charlie. No, I've seen it all over, too. I'm with you. Let's go to Deborah in Michigan. You're on the line.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Yeah, you were talking last night about this census, or they've selectively picked so many people.
Well, what they're doing is they're mapping out GPS spots where they didn't have GPS before. For instance, you know, on my TomTom, I go to my house, but my GPS ends about a mile away from my house. You know, it shows my road, but it doesn't show anything on it. It doesn't know the address on there. So it's not in, quote-unquote, the TomTom GPS system. It knows the streets I'm on, but it doesn't have addresses for the streets. So what the Census Bureau is doing, apparently, is that they're going to door-to-door to, you know, establishments and homes like mine, and they are setting GPS coordinates for the Census Bureau's own records. And I don't know if they – I'm going to guess they have their own satellite system. You know, we already have TomTom out there as a private one. We have Garmin. And now we have Google Earth, which is literally mapping every corner of the United States as we speak. And we know that Google is in bed with the United States government. So, you know, this just seems to be an extension of that program, that entire control grid program, to track and trace all of us.
Well, because I know I've Google Earth my home. And, I mean, I'm basically – looking at my house from the sidewalk in front of my house on Google Earth.
Yeah. Oh, and you know what? They have now, it's not only just the zoom in where you can see somebody's entire personal property. You can now, in most cases, go down to street level and kind of have that pan around. And, you know, you can probably see your neighbor's cars out on the sides of the street. You know, they update it ever so often. It's like, you know, every few weeks or so. But it's pretty scary how anybody right now, there's never been a time in history where it would be easier for someone to look up a random person, find out where they live, plan to kill them, and get away with it. I know that sounds... ridiculous, but it's so true, because they can lay out your entire home. They basically have blueprints of your property.
Right. I had a girlfriend over, and she lives like down the street around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
And I says, let's just take Google Earth, and we just pan down to her street. There's a picture of her house with her getting out of her car. And she freaked out. But this woman that came to my house yesterday, she was asking questions. Is anybody disabled? Is anybody mentally ill? Is anybody retired? Has anybody looked for work in the last week? If you were offered any job, would you take it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, all these really bizarre questions. And I had, you know, I've done census before. You know how they do them every 10 years?
Yeah, I think it was every 8, but yeah.
They don't ask questions like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, it's all going into an informational control grid. They are a full force press right now. And the information that the Census Bureau has is only going to integrate with all the other information they're taking from the private sector, from AT&T, from every phone call you make, from every single email you send out, from every IM you've got, from every text message. They are literally copying it. And they have this software, and this is the public stuff from before even 9/11. The two software apparatuses they used were a program called Promise and Carnivore. And what they do is they crunch all this information at an incredible rate and profile you. I mean, that's exactly what they're doing. No, look, look into Carnivore, look into Promise. These two softwares have been around forever. I'm sure they have one now that is, you know, 10 times as powerful. And they
the Promise?
P-R-O-M-I-S without an E is Promise software. And then just type in Carnivore. And this, again, was to stop terrorism. It's supposed to pick up keywords. This is their massive intelligence-gathering software that profiles you. And then on top of that, they have other things such as, you know, this AT&T program. Did you see the guy last summer, I think it was, on MSNBC who was literally hooking up the secret room with the Ethernet wire so that they could copy everybody's telephone calls, all their emails, all their voice messages, all that, basically have a hard wire in for the government?
You're kidding.
No, we're going to bring – you know what? I thank you for the call, Deborah. We're going to bring that clip up. Type in AT&T whistleblower Olbermann, and we're going to have that clip in the big segment. We might play it in the five-minute segment, but we're definitely going to play that one. I mean, listen, it's already here. This NLE 09 exercise, this national-level exercise, is going to teach the local government how to spy on everybody and how it's okay, how to database everybody, how to round everybody up in the case of an emergency, how to share information with federal agencies without a warrant, without your Fourth Amendment right. You find that, Jaron? You bring him up? I know we only got a minute and a half, but do we have that clip ready for the... So we're going to play part of that clip on the other side. It's like a 10-minute clip, but we'll just play the first 5 minutes of it. All right, let's go to the next caller. Dino in Oregon, you're on the line.
Hey, Jason, I really appreciate what you do. AJ and you are in my house every day. And the information keeps flowing. We are winning. I have a blog, libertypress.wordpress.com, and I broke the news about Iran and Venezuela are opening up a bank together.
Oh, how odd.
And no one's reporting it. It's on my website, libertypress.wordpress.com.
And where is that coming out of? Is that coming out of like AP or Reuters or something like that?
It's coming off of Iran Daily. I go to Iran Daily every day. It's a great website. I don't know if you like it or not, but it seems to tell the truth about what's going on.
I haven't been there. But no, you know, I've been saying, you know, in the backdrop, the Obama administration has said now it's working with Iran in the war on terror, even though they're trying to like, you know, feed everybody this fear about it. And we just had Obama openly shaking hands with Hugo Chavez right after he declares a new world order in China. It doesn't shock me that those two people are getting together and then they're now joining this apparatus under the Obama administration. I thank you for the call, Dino. It's the InfoWarrior with Jason Burmes. We'll be back after this. PrisonPlanet.tv. Segment, Sean, Chris, Scott, Brian, and others. The call line is 866-582-9933. But this one goes out to Deborah in Michigan. I hope you're still listening slash watching, Deborah. This is out of MSNBC. You bet they're spying on you, and you bet they have no remorse about it. They're extending these powers, expanding them, and being unapologetic for the Bush administration in this new one. Hit it, Jaron.
Six of the Dirksen building in Washington tomorrow, the Senate Judiciary Committee will consider whether to protect some of America's most powerful corporate executives from the legal consequences of having spied on the rest of us in this country. On our third story tonight, an AT&T whistleblower today told members of Congress much more than that is at stake with the secret crimes that took place at room 641A of AT&T's Folsom Street facility in San Francisco and potentially at others across the country. Specifically, retired 22-year AT&T technician Mark Klein says that despite Mr. Bush's claims, the U.S. government used AT&T's cooperation to spy not only on overseas communications, but to vacuum up virtually all of America's use of the Internet for years. Email, Googling, web surfing, you name it. Thanks to AT&T's secure rooms like 641A in San Francisco, accessible only to those cleared by the NSA. Klein obtaining AT&T schematics showing how the company used splitters to send secure room 641A, a duplicate of every fiber optic signal routed through its facilities. And involved not just AT&T customers, but virtually every internet and telecommunications company, and virtually all email and web traffic in the country. Without a warrant, without any mechanism for separating domestic from overseas, without separating suspect from citizen. We welcome now former AT&T technician Mark Klein, whose documentation and claims are now part of a class action lawsuit against AT&T, one of 38 telecom spy lawsuits. AT&T so far declining to comment on the specifics of these allegations. Mr. Klein, great thanks for speaking out tonight.
Thanks for inviting me.
The Senate is considering granting the telecom executives immunity. You lobbied Congress today not to do so. How come?
Well, if they give them immunity, it would probably shut down the lawsuit that I'm a witness for, and then the American people won't find out what's really going on. And so that's why I'm here, to stop immunity. Congress should let the judicial process go forward.
Two-parter here. First, can you explain to those of us who can use the Internet but would not be able to tell the difference between its physical form and, you know, a box full of guitar strings, exactly what happened in that secure room or secret room, 641A?
I don't know what goes on in the secret room because I didn't have security clearance. Mm-hmm. But I know what went on outside because my job, I worked in the Internet room. My job was to connect circuits into the splitter device, which was hardwired to the secret room. And effectively, the splitter copied the entire data stream of those Internet cables into the secret room. And we're talking about phone conversations, email, web browsing, everything that goes across the Internet. And that device, the splitters, is a dumb device. It doesn't do any selection at all.
Mm. And the follow-up to that, as you mentioned, you didn't have the security, the NSA clearance. So give us an idea how you know all this, in addition, obviously, to your expertise as a technician.
Well, as a technician, I had the engineering wiring documents, which told me how the splitter was wired to the secret room. And so I had to know that in order to do my job. And so I know that the whatever went across those cables was copied, and the entire data stream was copied into the secret room. The splitter device has no selective capability, just copies everything. And we're talking about domestic traffic as well as international traffic, and that's what got me upset to begin with.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Mr. Klein, this huge distinction the White House made when all this was first revealed, what its defenders still say, oh, we're just intercepting international communications, no domestic communications were affected. I'm taking you don't buy that in the slightest.
No, I know that wasn't true, and that's what got me going in December 05 when the New York Times revealed this, and then the administration came back, the president himself and his various cabinet people trying to argue, and they still do.
Well, there you have it. I mean, it's right there in broad daylight. They're copying all the communications of everybody, from your web browsing and surfing to your emails to your phone calls, and they don't have to tell you any of it. You like Big Brother, folks? Because to a certain extent, it's already here. It's been here. Now what they need to make Big Brother work is a large tattletale Stasi squad, a civilian national security force, one that will knock on doors on 9/11 as they put out fake propaganda memorials for the masses. It's the InfoWarrior with Jason Burmis. We'll be taking your calls on the other side, 866-582-9933. We're just shooting through the phone calls on the Info Warrior this evening. We got Mark Dice coming up in about 25 minutes to discuss his new book, Illuminati Fact and Fiction. All right, let's go to our next caller, Sean in Massachusetts. Sean, you're on the air.
Hey, Jason. Great talking to you. I just wanted to bring some criticism to you.
Okay.
And it's probably not something that is probably warranted, but we have a bunch of friends up here that listen to you guys, and we wanted to just talk to you about every single time that any one of us gets through to you guys, either Alex or yourself, that we're cut off without making our statement. And I see this and I hear it because I listen to the show a lot of times, and it's disheartening because I think that a lot of times people have a lot more to say. And I know that when you started, you probably had a lot more to say. And I think it's really important that you have to give the people a little bit more talk as to what they're going to say, because it's not...
Well, I hear you, man, but I also do try to give... I mean, like, I just gave you, 60 seconds. And I give people... I know that Alex cuts people off a lot more than I do. I'm not perfect, but at the same time, I've got, four callers behind you. And I try to give everybody, I only try to get rid of somebody if they are babbling or talking about the same thing, or I have to jump, if I've been spending 5 or 10 minutes on a subject. But, I try not to censor. I let my critics speak. That Scott in California, I may not agree with him, but I'll give him a couple minutes. I don't have a problem with that. And, I'm not trying to be disheartening. I take 40 phone calls in a 3-hour period sometimes. So,
I hear you. That I just wanted to bring that to your attention.
Sure.
The other thing that I wanted to bring to your attention, have you heard about the Sounds of Silence?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Let me just bring this to your attention, because I had a friend in Colorado that brought it to me with mind control as far as the digital boxes that are concerned, with the government spending an exorbitant amount of money.
The cable conversion boxes.
Yes.
And someone's saying that this is mind control, and somebody's saying this is mind control now? I've heard that, they're supposedly chipped, they supposedly have cameras in them, they supposedly have recording devices. I haven't seen any of that. And then mind control, all right, let's hear the thesis.
Okay, well, the same theory that they use, that they're supposedly going to be used on us, is the same thing that they used on the Iraqis. The physical, emotional, and psychological effects of this technology was so severe that hundreds of thousands of Iraqi troops surrender without firing a single shot against the U.S. coalition forces. Do you remember the war that was? The numbers reported in the news were staggering. 75,000 and then another 125,000 or more Iraqi troops would come out of their deep desert bunkers waving white flags and falling to their knees before the U.S. troops, literally kissing their captives' boots or hands if given the opportunity.
Yeah, but
eight-year veterans of Middle Eastern warfare, the war with Iran, 1980-88, behave this way? Simple. They were subjected to technology that was so extreme and incomprehensible that they were suddenly reduced to the level of compliant children and felt grateful to still be alive in the wake of their mind-wrenching experiences.
Yeah, but don't you think that that's really, if it was anything, it was the sound weapons? We've seen the sound weapons tested now on our own troops, and immediately it feels like your entire body's on fire. You lose any kind of function other than to run away or retreat. I could see it being that. I don't necessarily think it's mind control, and I really just don't know how that would play into, these DTV boxes. I thank you for the call. Again, I try to let people speak, but the DTV boxes are mind control, folks. Give me some evidence. Don't just tell me about a war where a bunch of people surrendered. We do have sound wave weapons. That is not, it's something I can talk about. It's something they used at the RNC in 2004. There's a lot of hokey stuff out there. I remember a couple times, InfoWars gets these tips that are hoaxes, the hand sound weapon and all that other stuff. Look, they got sound weapons. They can shoot concentrated beams of sound at you, and it feels like you're on fire. To me, that's what would make people surrender. Even in the 80s, it's plausible to me that technology has been around. since then. Is it mind control? Is it a part of HARP? I doubt it. I got to see some real evidence. And for someone to just come off and say the DirecTV boxes are mind control, I just don't see where that's coming from. All right. Let's jump to Chris in Pennsylvania. Chris, you're on the line.
Hey.
How you doing, Chris?
I'm doing pretty good. There were a few things that I wanted to bring up. One of the other callers said something about a fire drill or something going on.
He basically said that every week in his town on Wednesday, they have an alarm going off, and it is an emergency response alarm, but it's just a drill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We had the same thing going on like every day on noon in my town that I grew up in.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see it being something that you'd really have to worry about. It's probably just testing the system.
Yeah, no, I wasn't that worried about it. I'd be more worried about it when you see troops on the street or you see them forming for a, you know, mass casualty exercise or a terrorism exercise. Or, you know, you see, you know, checkpoints. Or like that reporter that was filming these troops helping with a car accident. Oh, what happens? No, film me. We're going to arrest you. You know, I mean,
yeah, exactly.
That's the stuff to worry about to me. I mean, like I just went through with this last guy, I stick to stuff I can prove. You know, that's why when I'm talking to Deborah in Michigan and we're talking about the Census Bureau and the questions they're asking about you, and I just got to tell the lady, look, they're Big Brother's here. They're already admittedly spying on you. They already have all the information they want on you if they want it. It's all been packaged somewhere. It's all been archived. What's wrong is they don't have the manpower to not only go through all this information intelligently, but then enforce what they would like, which would be mass roundups and killings. I mean, that's what they want. That's their control grid. That's why they're about to drill it. They're about to drill a mass spying terrorism exercise in the United States with the UK, with Mexico, with Canada, with Australia, and it's the first one of its kind, and I'll bet your ass that AT&T is going to be involved giving up any information that the federales want or the international intelligence organizations want. Anything else, Chris?
Yeah, there were a few things I wanted to bring up. You and Alex tend to bring up Googling.
Yes.
Like you guys say, go Google this. There was a story that you can find through searchinfowars.com about, I don't know what the guy's name was, but he said something about how Google was in bed
with the CIA.
With the CIA, yeah.
They absolutely are. They didn't start out that way, but they absolutely are. And a lot of things are going missing from Google.
Yeah.
But as far as I have found, it is still the best search engine out there with the best Boolean searches. And if you know a certain phrase, it's very easy. Some of the other ones I use when that doesn't work out for me, or if I'm really, you know, trying to do a deep search, I can't find what I'm looking for and I know it exists, I'll go to web crawler.
There was this one website I wanted to bring up called ixquick.com.
Okay, ixquick, is that a search engine?
Yes, it's a search engine. You can do video, pictures, and web. There's also a phone option, but I wouldn't suggest using it because those pretty much don't work online.
Uh-huh.
It's pretty good. It's an encrypted web search. Your ISP, and pretty much no one else will be able to look at it. And you can search for pretty much anything. It's not nearly as good as Google, but it pretty much rivals Yahoo.
Well, I mean, you know, dog piles out there, web crawlers out there. You know, Google's relatively new. Google was something I learned to use in the last, you know, 8 years or so. I mean, before, you know, 2000, 2001, I never even, you know, Google wasn't even around. It was all Yahoo and all this other stuff. I just tell people to check into everything. Google isn't the only thing, but it's usually the quickest and the most accurate, but, you know, you can find some gems out there if you're willing to search. I thank you for the call, Chris. Let's jump to Scott in Washington. Scott, you're on the line.
Yeah, I wanted to bring up this thing of the this national compulsory service thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, isn't it funny now all of a sudden that these so-called liberals are now all of a sudden in line for this so-called thing because it's their guy that they don't want to admit who's trying to push this thing?
Mm-hmm.
But it seems to me that I remember a lot of them sitting around there hyperventilating when they thought that John McCain, if he got elected, oh, he was talking about 100 years war and he'll have the draft and all of this stuff. But, you know, these so-called liberals are also complicit for it. You know, just for example, and I'll bring him up because, you know, he brought it up on Alex's show, Tom Hartman sitting there talking that crap and trying to misquote. Or I don't know whether Jefferson has said it or not, and I don't really care, trying to say that this is what Jefferson wants. Now, what Tom Hartman was doing was quoting exactly what Rahm Emanuel has been saying for the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just plain sickening. You know,
well, I agree. Everybody has their blind spots as well. I think Tom Hartman overall is a really good guy. But if you're buying into the compulsory service and these youth brigades, you have to really rethink your position. And one of these guys over at Air America, he's a comedian. His name's Mark Maron. He just did this whole disgusting video blog about Alex Jones and associated with Glenn Beck. You saw it, right? Well, he actually says that the camps are good, or the re-education is good, and the civilian service is good. And he's like, good, let them learn. He acts like they're going to be learning math in these in this National Service Corps, in this mandatory service. He says it's a great thing. He's all for the re-education camps, in his own words.
Well, it's not just that. It was also Benazir Brzezinski talked about this stuff too. And it's just like, you know, and I'm legitimately talking about the government of Israel and their policies, not the people, but mm-hmm. that seems like that they're enforcing that kind of a will over here. And, you know, all of a sudden, oh, the left can't seem to see that. It's all about protecting their party. But if it's the right, they're neo-Nazis and they go for this kind of stuff. And it's like, you know, give us a break. Do they think that everyone is this stupid?
No, but they do believe they can control the paradigm, just like you never heard about a Tea Party in the national media ever until this year when Fox co-opted it and they made it a right and left issue. So as long as they can get the lemmings fighting with each other and rooting for a team, that's all they care about, because that releases the steam on the valve and it cools off the population from any chance of a revolt or a revolution or even a peaceful reformation of the Constitution and Bill of Rights, because they don't know what the issues are. They're too busy worried about being conservative or liberal.
Well, now, what really makes me mad with Tom Hartman bringing this up, now, from what I've read of his past, back in the Vietnam War, he joined college to avoid the draft, but yet he's going to tell somebody else's kid that they need to go over to Afghanistan and get, if he wants to take his little skinny ass and get his face blown off, he's more than welcome to do that.
Well, the real issue is that what are the chances, even if Tom Hartman were to go over there, that he would get his face blown off? There's really no major combat going in Afghanistan. It's all fiction. It's all an excuse to put troops in there. It's all a excuse to keep infrastructure in Afghanistan so they can continue to build their Eurasian Union, sir. I thank you for the call.
Yeah.
I mean, they've got Israel in their pocket. You know, Israel's intelligence agency is the same as the United States intelligence agency. They're arms of each other. All right? Let me give you an example. Iran-Contra. They use Israel as a proxy. Israel provides the money for the guns. They round up the guns in the Czech Republic and elsewhere. They give them to the United States. The United States flies them down to South America, where they trade them to the Contras for drugs, which they then peddle in the U.S. 9/11. Israel is used as a proxy to spy on the American people through Amdocs and Comverse to pull off some of the more hardcore aspects of 9/11, being caught with explosives on the day of 9/11. But at the same time, you can't just have Israel run the op. You need Pakistani intelligence for plausible deniability to fund the hijackers. You need U.S. intelligence in Saudi Arabia to set up this visa department where they're working with Islamic militants and Osama bin Laden to bring a lot of the hijackers into the United States to train at U.S. bases. You need the continuity of government program in the United States to help pull off and coordinate the attacks through drills. So again, this is truly an international intelligence organization, and they are hell-bent on building a global governance society, a new world order. All right, let's go to our next caller. Brian in Texas, you're on the line.
Thanks. I'm calling about the child health care insurance policy that Texas Department of Insurance has.
Okay.
That's, it seems to be a subliminal acclimating, like the Masons have a chip program, too.
The Masani chip program?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so down the line, it looks like that, you know, while you just call it chip right now, that later on they'll actually implement an actual chip.
Yeah, and immediately when somebody hears this and doesn't know what it is, they automatically think microchip off the bat. But it's a nice little acronym for them having, oh, we're going to have their dental records, and oh, we're going to have their thumbprints, and oh, we're going to have a picture of them. Oh, if they're ever lost, we're going to be able to find them. And it doesn't even stand for microchip, But along the lines, they're going to have it, just like I had comedian Bill Burr on a few weeks ago, and he discussed that commercial where they're selling batteries to scare children while a woman is in the park, and she's like, oh my God, where's Timmy? And she's got a tracking device on him, and she hits the tracking device, and then all of a sudden the kid runs out from the woods. I mean, they are prepping you in commercials for batteries to take surveillance chips so that your kids are safe. I mean, how crazy is that?
And then think about this. I heard today on Reuters they had the cyborg machines. Alex was talking about it earlier.
Which ones?
The machines that like go into battle for you.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, all right, for instance, we covered the big dogs on this show. Now, I don't know of any big dogs that are armed with machine guns or whatever, but basically it looks like a dog without a head running at you, and it'll carry equipment and all this other stuff, and you can try to kick it over to the side. It has incredible balance. And
right.
Then go ahead.
The Skynet machine, the Ministry of Defense, has a Skynet program.
Oh, that's for the UAVs, yeah, that run all the UAVs.
Yeah, it runs for the Reaper, the MQ-9 Reaper.
Sure. Well, you know what? Those are almost a totally different issue to me. Like, the UAVs are incredible in their self, but the cybernetics and the artificial intelligence that's out there right now that is literally exploding. I mean, for instance, today on this show alone, we covered this Aqua Ray. Have you seen the Aqua Ray?
No, I haven't.
It's basically looks exactly like a Stingray, only it has the company Festo logo imprinted on its fin. Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to tell it from another Stingray. We covered
it
yesterday. Yeah, dude. type in Aqua Ray and Aqua Ray robot. Yesterday, we covered the Robo Penguin. And this thing is totally, it looks like something out of T2. It has that kind of skeletal structure. The eyes glow. It looks like something out of Batman 2 / Terminator 2. And the thing's got sonar. We've covered the Robo Fish, a 5-foot carp object. Okay, we even covered the Japanese 2-year-old child with its own skin structure. I thank you for the call, Brian. Check those out. We'll be back after this. It's the Info Warrior with Jason Burmes, PrisonPlanet.tv, Infowars.com. Have Mark Dice coming up in the next segment for an entire hour. We may take some calls in the second half of that, but right now I'm going to try to rush through your phone calls in this last 5 minutes. Let's go to Rob in California. You're on the line.
Hey, how's it going?
All right, man. What's up?
Well, I was just calling to see if you had heard about this new regional currency taking place in South America.
I did hear, so I read a headline, I think, out of Yahoo or something like that, or one of the things. Enlighten me. What are they saying?
Well, basically, it's going to be it's something like Bolivarian alternative to America.
Mm-hmm.
Supposedly going to be taking place virtually now, starting 2010, although...
Wait, is this the story, hold on, is this the story that the World Bank tried to blackmail me, Bolivia President Evo Morales said on Wednesday, and that's why they're doing this?
I'm not really sure. I just read about it. So
well, right here, it says right here, Morales, the country's first Indian president and a fierce critic of the United States, said the World Bank has improved since that time by dropping such conditions on aid lending. He also expressed his support for a thorough reform of the International Monetary Fund. I welcome Brazil and Argentina's proposal to radically reform the IMF, and I also welcome the World Bank's change of attitude, he said. I'm not sure about it. I'll have to look it up, and maybe I'll talk about it on the Monday program if I get back in time. I thank you for the call, Rob. Let's jump to Clarence in Florida. Clarence, you're on the line.
Hey, Jason, I just want to say great job on that Homeland Security job story that you uncovered the other night.
Oh, thank you, man.
In LE09, though, I think there's more to it. Let me tell you what my take on that is. Mm-hmm. All these pessimism porn economic forecasters like Gerald Celente and Peter Schiff are predicting a total economic meltdown in 90 days. Mm-hmm. And this is going to involve some starvation and riots and maybe some general mayhem in the streets. This multinational force is just going to conveniently be on hand at that time, and they will move against these disturbances.
I have thought about that as a possibility for sure, but I really think that's so transparent that I just can't see them doing it. I mean, Lindsay Williams comes on this show about 2 weeks ago, and he said we had 30 to 60 days. Celente is predicting 90 days as of, like, this week. Is it going to happen? I'm not sure. It is a definite possibility. If you do start to see that type of thing happen in this country, and it does start to coincide with those dates, we should keep our eyes and ears open.
Oh, yeah, because the multinational force is the only thing that will move against the people.
And that's what they're looking to do right here. They're looking to bring in international troops. They're looking to end the Fourth Amendment. They're really looking to brainwash the local government as well as the private sector. I mean, they're looking to bring it all in right here. And who knows if this is the time that they start to move against the Patriots. It's a possibility.
If you're on the streets, you're going to go to the FEMA camps.
Well, we'll see. I mean, I don't want to go that far, but you never know. And I would also, you know, encourage people to be aware. That's why we're putting this information out. That's why we're talking about this drill, not only because it's the first of its kind, not only because 9/11 was followed by a bunch of drills with similar attacks, but to let people know that FEMA, you know, the ones that don't have the camps, apparently, according to Glenn Beck and Jimmy Meggs, is about to run a massive exercise to stop a terrorist attack. And that may include spying on the masses and rounding them up. We'll be back after this with Mark Dice. It's the Info Warrior with Jason Burmis, PrisonPlanet.tv, Infowars.com.
She was a virgin when I first met her. Rockin' stockings and poppin' out of the Catholic school sweater. Mom told me she could do better than a criminal. 17-year-old psychotic trying to be lyrical. I never meant to break her heart and fuck up her life, but I was careless instead of treating her right. I seen her again at some club stripping and wondered if I could have made her life different.
I made a mistake. Yes, I did.
Damn, shorty.
And I am glad to announce that we are joined by Mark Dice of the ResistanceManifesto.com and, of course, MarkDice.com. And I have a pre-copy of the Illuminati Facts and Fiction. I was saying fact or fiction before. And I'm actually going to be reading this book tomorrow on the plane back to New York if I can stay up. It's an early flight, but I'm definitely looking forward to it, Mark.
Well, thanks, man, and great show, and I don't just mean that as the typical intro banter. It really is a great show. You're a good host. I enjoy listening to your show. Sometimes I'll actually put my laptop in my vehicle because I don't have a an XM radio here. So good job on the show, man.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. You know, we are trying to break out and really give people an alternative to the alternative, a late-night show where we can cover the issues and really go through the issues two times a day because the news doesn't stop because Alex Jones is off the air. You know, often a lot of big stories come in after or we'll miss big stories, and I really think that this NLE09 exercise is a big story and really needs to be blown up. I think the mainstream media is eventually going to pick up on it. When? I don't know. It could be a week before the exercise. It could be a month. It could be tomorrow. But I think it's an important story, and people have to check it out. The story I really want to talk to you about kind of coincides with your book, because you have a whole chapter in this new book about angels and demons and the Da Vinci Code and Dan Brown. And did you see this Esquire article bashing conspiracy theorists, basically putting them in league with Holocaust deniers and white supremacists? And the title of the article, I believe, is Why Conspiracy Theorists Are Part of the Problem.
No, I heard you mentioning it, and he mentioned that we were too wrapped up in angels and demons, which is part of the reason why I was actually inspired to write this book, because I knew that this movie, Angels and Demons, the movie, comes out May 15th, so it's in about 2 weeks, 3 weeks it comes out. It's going to be huge. It's all about the Illuminati and the symbolism, and it is going to bring the Illuminati from the subculture and from the internet into the mainstream. And as we're going to get into later in the show, you'll find out that it is the possibly the biggest whitewash and disinformation campaign. And Mr. Dan Brown himself has some very interesting ties to the Illuminati that we'll get into as well. And you know, yeah, the angels and demons, I don't even know where to begin. Basically, the movie comes out, but it's based on Dan Brown's book. He's the author of The Da Vinci Code, which everybody probably knows by now. It expounds this conspiracy theory that the Jesus had a family, and the Catholic Church is trying to kill it, and the secret societies are hiding this family tree, which kind of coincides with the Merovingians and some Illuminati symbology, but it doesn't really mention the Illuminati by name, mentions the Freemasons, the Knights Templar. But Angels and Demons was actually published in 2000, and it's about the Catholic Church is being threatened by the Illuminati, who's going to blow up the Vatican with an antimatter bomb. And it sounds kind of cheesy, but it's got this promotion behind it, which I believe is purposely to create this sort of fictionalization of the real Illuminati. And Dan Brown does an excellent job, actually, of mixing in facts with fiction. And in the whole book, he references the actual Illuminati, some actual Illuminati history, that he mentions they're satanic. He mentions that, here I'm just going to quote from the book, in the 1700s, the Masons unknowingly became a front for the Illuminati. The Illuminati grew within their ranks, gradually taking over positions of power within the lodges. They quietly reestablished their scientific brotherhood deep within the Masons, a kind of secret society within a secret society. The Illuminati used the worldwide connection of Mason lodges to spread their influence. So he's a very clever propagandist, and on the other side, we'll get into some more of his strange disinformation and purposeful whitewashes.
MarkDice.com is the website. The book is The Illuminati, Facts and Fiction. We'll be back after this. It's The Info Warrior, PrisonPlanet.tv, InfoWars.com. We are live with Mark Dice of MarkDice.com. The new book is The Illuminati, Facts and Fiction. And we're discussing the upcoming Dan Brown novel turned into a book, Angels and Demons. This is the prequel to The Da Vinci Code. And in it, the main character, Robert Langdon, hunts down the Illuminati. And I think I'm almost 100% positive that overseas the book wasn't called Angels and Demons. It was called The Illuminati.
I'm not sure about that. They might have changed the title. There might have been some conflict. There's another book titled The Illuminati out by another man that actually presents a fictional story, but in a more factual way, really in a way to kind of convey the real essence of the Illuminati. And Dan Brown, you know, I don't urge anybody to go see the movie. I don't think you have to. It's going to be a blockbuster. But I think that what we're going to cover here in the next few minutes is really important, so that anybody that goes and sees this movie, or from now on after May 15th, whenever anybody mentions the Illuminati, people are going to think that you are a psycho that saw Angels and Demons too many times, because Dan Brown is such an evil genius. He mixes in actual historical information about the Illuminati. He references the all-seeing eye on the back of the $1 bill, and the lead character, this man named Robert Langdon, is a expert on the Illuminati, and he pulls out the dollar bill out of his pocket, and he says that that's what got him interested in the Illuminati, is the all-seeing eye, and he became this symbologist, and he's a Harvard professor, and so he's trying to help the Vatican Church track down the Illuminati. Where would their hidden lair be so that they can find the antimatter before it blows up Vatican City, when they're holding this conclave where they elect a new pope? And so he references actual historical quotes by historical figures about the Illuminati, and he builds up this this tremendous story, even referencing the internet, and there's one element in the book here where it says, this morning, when I typed in the word Illuminati into the computer, it returned several thousand current references. Apparently, the people think that the group is still active. So Robert Langdon, this character is played by Tom Hanks, doesn't believe that the Illuminati still exists. He thinks that they went into extinction in the late 1700s after they were exposed in Germany, just like most mainstream apologists will say. This doesn't exist anymore. It never continued on, and it's a thing in the past. And then he comes to believe that they still exist and that they're out to attack the Vatican. But Dan Brown, I'm going to get to the crescendo of his lies and his Illuminati ties, Dan Brown's personal ties here in a bit. But some of the odd things that he mixes in that have no reference in basis in reality at all is that he makes the Illuminati seem like they were a group of scientists and artists, mm-hmm. and that the evil Catholic Church was persecuting them. And the Illuminati, he says, included Galileo, who actually died almost 100 years before the actual Illuminati was created. Galileo died in 1642. Now, for those who don't know, Galileo is largely responsible for the heliocentric idea of the universe, of the sun being the center of the universe. Now, Copernicus kind of came up with that idea, and then Galileo basically popularized it, and he was placed on house arrest from the Catholic Church because that was a heretical idea according to the Catholic Church at the time. And so apparently, according to Dan Brown, he was in the Illuminati, and it was just a group of scientists and artists that were just pursuing the truth. And the evil Catholic Church, which really was evil and is to some extent today, was persecuting them and killed them all and killed Copernicus. The Dan Brown claims that the Catholic Church killed Copernicus, who came up with heliocentrism when he actually died at the age of 70. And back in the 17th century, that was actually a pretty good old age. There. So one other interesting piece of information there. And for those who are new to this, I'll let you know that the Illuminati brands are a complete fiction of Dan Brown. Dan says that the Illuminati created these iron brands, like you brand a cow or a cattle, in the names of earth, fire, wind, and water, the four ancient elements that that ancient scientists believe made up the physical universe. And he says that the Illuminati made these brands, and in the film and in the book, the Illuminati is branding these cardinals in the chest as retribution, and they murder them at the sites of several artifacts that are several statues really created by the famous artist Bernini.
Mm-hmm.
And many people may be familiar with Bernini, Giovanni Bernini. He died in 1680, and he was a famous sculptor and sculpted a lot of religious sculptures and things, and he worked for the Vatican. So Dan Brown says that he was a secret Illuminati member, and he encoded Illuminati messages into his artwork. And we know that the Illuminati does encode things into their artwork, but certainly Bernini was not one of these individuals. And Bernini himself, of course, died 100 years before the actual Illuminati was created. And so they build up this interesting story. It's quite a compelling story. I don't urge anybody to go buy the book. It's already sold many, many millions, made Dan Brown a very, very rich man. But I do think that everybody should know the facts and the fiction from it. So I've actually posted my entire chapter of this issue on my site, on markdice.com, and everybody can read it. There's a banner up on the top, Angels and Demons Fraud Exposed, if you want to read this and spread it around everybody so that they know. And an interesting thing here with his personal ties to the Illuminati. Now, one can ask, why is it that such a book was propelled and sold millions and millions of copies? And we know that the Illuminati gets behind tokens that they want to lift up and raise up. And obviously, since they own the media and the money, they can just put their entire propaganda machine behind somebody and build them up and take somebody from an obscure no-name author like Dan Brown if they see that he has a good message that's going to taint the truth and taint Christianity in the instance of the Da Vinci Code, that they're just going to build him up and they're going to promote that book. And it's interesting that the publisher of Angels and Demons The original copy. Now they've sold the rights. They, publishers will do this. They'll sell the rights to other publishers after its initial printing and after it's become a success. But the initial printing of Angels and Demons was done by Random House through its subsidiary Doubleday. Now the reprints rights have been through Simon and Schuster now. But what's interesting is Random House is owned by this company called Bertelsmann Media Group in Germany. And according to the London Times and other publications, the Bertelsmann Media Group was the biggest producer of Nazi propaganda during World War II.
Oh.
So here we have the biggest producer of Nazi propaganda, admittedly, being the company that owns the publisher of Angels and Demons.
And let's, you know, not forget that the Da Vinci Code is probably the most read book of our generation at this point, other than outside of the Harry Potter books. I mean, if you ask a normal person, an average person out there, you know, well, what's a book you've read in the past couple of years, the past 5 years? A lot of people will tell you The Da Vinci Code. I read The Da Vinci Code. It is a very entertaining story. The guy's a decent writer, you know? And at the same time, now they're about to boost the Angels and Demons as big or bigger than The Da Vinci Code through the release of this movie. Some people don't even know that Dan Brown has another book and that it deals with this secret society that in actuality has a basis in reality. I mean, this is a real organization. Like you said, he often integrates fact with fiction to tell his story. And, you know, he'll tell you a lot about the symbology. One of the cool things, if you got the hardcover of the Da Vinci Code, is when he's talking about these things about the Holy Grail and, you know, this Christ conspiracy, he shows you the paintings and what they supposedly mean. I know that they didn't do that as much in Angels and Demons, but they may do it if it gets reprinted, and I'm sure it will be reprinted all over the place after this film comes out and makes $100 million.
It's going to be the number one film. He has a new book, a third book, coming out in September. I don't know exactly what it's about. Rumor has it that it's about the symbology in Washington, D.C. The title's called The Lost Symbol. Mm-hmm. Okay, and I'm going to get to some more interesting Illuminati connections with Dan Brown in a minute, but since you mentioned the Da Vinci Code, I personally believe that the purpose of the Da Vinci Code and that whole theory that Jesus had a bloodline, and which is totally debunked, and I'm sorry if anybody believes this, and I'm saying this really as from a secular point of view, the DNA doesn't match up. I mean, they've done all these studies. It just isn't possible. It's this ridiculous idea, but I believe that the Illuminati is perpetuating that idea. I know that many out there are secular. I know that, Jason, you're not a very religious guy, but this is what I believe. For anybody out there, just take it for what it's worth, that the Illuminati is perpetuating this idea so that one day when their great Christ, which is what they want, and the Masonic books all talk about their Christ coming, their New Age Maitreya coming, that they can then claim that that's sort of the reincarnation of Jesus, and that that bloodline, that family tree, has been hidden by these secret societies from, you know, evil people like you and from me that would have stopped them from building their New World Order utopia. So I think that that's largely why that book and that theory is being perpetuated.
And I always find it really funny, you know, you say that Maitreya figure. You know, I didn't really know too much about this Maitreya figure until recently, but apparently this Maitreya figure, or this, you know, new coming Christ that they believe in, is the same as the Buddha figure. And what really makes me interested in this is that some of the pictures that we got from the Bohemian Grove, some of the really older stuff, you know, there's a whole section with a giant Buddha the size of the giant owl god. You know, so the Bohemian Grove may really be what we've gotten suggestions and emails, a nematome of multiple religions. And I want to talk to Mark about that on the other side. It's the Info Warrior with Jason Burmes, PrisonPlanet.tv, Infowars.com. We are back. It's the InfoWarrior with Jason Burmis. We are joined by Mark Dice, markdice.com. The new book is The Illuminati, Facts and Fiction. And Mark, how does all this, in your opinion, play into each other? You know, you talk about this coming Maitreya figure, and we know that the elites get together in Sonoma, California for 2 weeks out of the year at the Bohemian Grove Club. Their kickoff ceremony is that of the cremation of care with a large statue, an owl statue called Moloch. Now, there are other parts of the grove where there is one of these Maitreya figures. There's a separate part of the grove where they have, you know, St. John of Maple Nook, you know, putting his fingers up to his mouth in order to tell people to keep quiet what goes on there. I mean, what is your opinion of what these symbols mean in this grove?
Well, the Nazis believe that the Aryan people, the white people, are descendant from the lost city of Atlantis, from these god demigods, these god enlightened beings that are semi-man, semi-god. And so what all this is coming to is that they believe that a human is going to either regain those powers, and that's what Hitler thought that he was going to do. That's why he wanted to kill everybody except for white people, so to purify the race, because he thought that he himself then would evolve into a god and then gain the powers that the lost Atlanteans once had. So I think what they're trying to do, and again, whether no matter what religion you are, atheist, secularist, a Buddhist, Muslim, I have friends of every race, every religion, and a lot of religions warn about this Antichrist type of a figure that is going to claim to be a god, and that is going to claim you're going to have to worship him. And so what this is all coming to is either they believe that a human is going to either evolve into this godlike figure and then rule over Earth, or that some sort of an entity is going to manifest itself into a human or manifest itself onto the Earth from another dimension, another planet, another time, something along those lines, and then be a god and then offer unlimited life and offer unlimited everything to the individuals that will worship him as a god. And so this is, again, this is the Illuminati Facts and Fiction is actually a more secular approach than the Resistance Manifesto. In the manifesto, I talk about how the New World Order is kind of creating this sort of infrastructure and how the New Age occult beliefs fit in with Christian Bible prophecy. But regardless of what your own personal views are, this is what these powerful individuals are doing. This is what Hitler was doing. Hitler was driven by the occult, believing that he himself would sort of evolve into this all-knowing God figure. And again, that's really the core of megalomania, is thinking that you are a god, thinking that you're the only thing that matters, that you are the only thing that exists and that everybody else doesn't matter, and that they need to sort of identify with you as this higher being, this superior man or god or demagogue or whatever. And so I think what they're trying to do in the Bohemian Grove, a lot of it is just kind of theatrics dating back to ancient times when they actually used to sacrifice children to Moloch, and perhaps that they used to actually do that fairly recently in the Bohemian Grove. I mean, we know back in the 80s there were some snuff films that were allegedly produced in the Grove, which ties in with some bizarre form of sex magic, which maybe we can get into. But mm-hmm. that's kind of what they're getting at, is that they believe that from this Illuminati secret society, from this network of the Freemasons and the New Age circles, that this guy is going to either evolve or become a super enlightened or have become possessed by some sort of an entity, or that this entity is going to come back to Earth. That's kind of the gist of it.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, you just talked about sex magic rituals. So on the other side, hopefully we can get into Aleister Crowley and what he believed and really what he brought to the table and why he still is talked about today as a central figure in all of this occultism and New World Order philosophy. I just watched a documentary produced by the BBC called Aleister Crowley, The Other Loch Ness Monster, where they were openly, you know, unapologetic in saying that Crowley was a great man and that he was intelligent, he was an explorer, and that he really, you know, didn't worship Satan, you know, he worshiped technology, and, you know, Lucifer is good. All of this propaganda to try to build him up as some kind of a cult hero. Well, he's definitely an occultist, but he's not my hero. We'll be back after this. It's the Info Warrior with Jason Burmis, joined by Mark Dice of MarkDice.com.
When they tortured and scared you for 20-odd years, then they expect you to pick a career. When you can't really function, you're so full of fear. A working class hero is something to be.
We're joined by Mark Dice. The new book is The Illuminati, Facts and Fiction. And I'm sure that you go into Aleister Crowley in this film. And it's just kind of sickening to me how he's been hyped up as kind of like this, you know, anti-hero hero. And that, you know, this guy was a real... I mean, there's no doubt he was intelligent. But to put him on this, you know, cult hero status and to promote his philosophies... it's not only disingenuous, but it's really an outright lie the way they promote it and act like, oh, you know, this guy never really believed in that sort of stuff. He just did it. I mean, this guy was like the guy that was into sex magic rituals. I mean, he did a ritual with, who was it? Jack Parsons and L. Ron Hubbard, I believe, did a ritual that was based on Crowley in order to bring in the religion of Scientology.
Aleister Crowley is a total dirtbag, drug addict. He died basically broke and homeless. He had STDs. I mean, really just a wreck of a man. And, you know, the purpose of Enlightenment teachings and of spiritual teachings is really supposed to free you from the chains of life and really use your intellect to understand how the world works and your place in it and the morality and the metaphysical rules. And so Aleister Crowley is a total failure in that regard and an utter dirtbag. And I will get back to him and his sex rituals, but I want to make sure that we cover, there's a few more points regarding angels and demons that are very important.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not going to believe the ending. I'm just going to give it away for you because I don't want anybody to be surprised. And when your friends start talking about angels and demons, you have to understand how big of a whitewash this is at the crescendo, at the climax, at the very end. It's incredible, and I admire his evil genius at how he was able to do this. So a few other points. The Bilderberg Group financed the Illuminati. It's in the book. He mentions that. So again, he says the Illuminati are a bunch of scientists. He gets the date wrong of when the Illuminati was in existence. He defends the Illuminati on multiple occasions, one time saying, quote, "The Illuminati may have believed in the abolition of Christianity, but they wielded their power through political and financial means, not through terrorist acts. Furthermore, the Illuminati had a strict code of morality regarding who they saw as enemies." And so another interesting connection here with Dan Brown himself, and then I'll just give away the ending here, is he was a graduate of Phillips Exeter Academy, which is a private boarding school in the East Coast for the children of the wealthy. And for, you know, I'm sure maybe none of us have ever been to a boarding school, but it's where you send your kids off to, and they live, and they go to school from, you know, whatever grade to whatever grade. So the Phillips Exeter Academy is from the 9th through 12th grade. So Dan Brown went there. And what's interesting about the Phillips Exeter Academy is it's sort of a grooming ground for the children of the elite and the children of the Illuminati. So they kind of give them their higher education as opposed to us little people have the poor public schools to indoctrinate us. So this is where they get the real teachings about how the world actually works, which is kept from us. What's also interesting about the Phillips Exeter Academy is that John D. Rockefeller's right-hand man and the guy that had the second most shares in Standard Oil back in the 1900s was this guy named Edward Harkness. So, again, he was the number two man in Standard Oil, John D. Rockefeller's right-hand man. John D. Rockefeller, big Illuminati guy, his family still to this day is involved. And so in 1930, this man, Edward Harkness, donated $5.8 million to the school under the condition that their method of teaching the students would be changed to what he called the Aristotelian method of antiquity. Okay, so Aristotle was a student of Plato, for those philosopher buffs out there. And Plato, while he had some great ideas, Plato is really the source of a lot of people for the lost city of Atlantis, but also Plato had this interesting idea of philosopher kings, where he believed that the certain people with hyper enlightenment would be able to rule over the masses and would know better than the people. And so it's very interesting that that John D. Rockefeller's right hand man donated almost $6 million back in the '30s to this school, and then you combine that with Dan Brown's publisher, the Random House, owned by the Bertelsmann Media Group in Germany, again, the largest admitted publisher of Nazi propaganda during World War II.
Yeah, it's a lot of interesting coincidences, Mark. Obviously, they're all just coincidences that they teach the school of thought where the ends justifies the means and the masses should be ruled over by their leaders, by their gods. And, you know, he puts this out there. And like I said, you know, you are right in the fact that this is going to blow the Illuminati up to another level, bring it into the pop culture consciousness. And then anytime we try to talk about, you know, the Bilderberg Group and beyond that into the New World Order and then into the Illuminati. Oh, you watched that movie. You're crazy. It's kind of like what they did with the Freemasons with those two Nick Cage movies.
Oh, this is even worse, and I'm gonna give away the climax right here. So he talks about the New World Order and the Internet and the Illuminati and the dollar bill and the Bilderberg Group and all this stuff. And, you know, the Illuminati is going to blow up the Catholic Church as retribution for for suppressing them and for torturing non-Christians back in the day. And then at the very end, it turns out that there really is no such thing as the Illuminati, because it really did go into existence, and it was one man, it was one sick, demented Vatican official that stole the antimatter and then plotted to blow up the Vatican and then hired one man to kill some of these officials, some of these cardinals. And then, oh, it just turns out that the Illuminati really did go into extinction, and this man was just playing off of everybody's fears and conspiracy theories.
So what you're telling me is the Illuminati doesn't exist, and it's an insider in the Vatican that's actually doing this and using the fear from the Illuminati, you know, mythos in order to carry out his plot.
Yes, and it's not, the Vatican is not directly involved. It's just one man. It's one man that was angry that people were losing their faith in God, and so he had orchestrated this whole thing to make this big media spectacle to blow up the Vatican, and then at the last minute he decides that he's going to save the Vatican, and then it turns out that God and the Christians and the Vatican are actually victorious over the evil Illuminati, but then it's actually exposed that the Illuminati doesn't exist and that he was behind it, and that it turns out that Robert Langdon, this character, fell for the whole scam, and wow, I guess we were all just a little too paranoid on those internet conspiracy theories.
That is just awful. I didn't even know that, and that is 10 times more awful, because you're right. I mean, it is going to be a lot worse, and you talk about the Illuminati. Oh, they were gone, man. Didn't you see that movie? Done.
It builds it up like they really exist. They still exist. They've been in existence. And then, I guess they really don't exist anymore. It's
all right.
Fascinating. I really admire the evil genius of Dan Brown and the Illuminati promoters for promoting this.
And the multi millions of dollars he has due to these books and now movies. I mean, he's got to be worth at least 100, 200 mil.
Oh, yeah. Well, his newest book, The Lost Symbol, is having a first print run of 5 million copies. So,
Oh, my God.
Right there, he probably made at least another 10 or 15 million just off the book, not to mention the movie rights and everything. It's insane.
It is insane. That is an insane number. All right. Well, you know, we still got a little bit of time in this big segment. So let's talk about Aleister Crowley and how he is involved in this new book, The Illuminati Facts and Fiction.
Now, again, you got it right on the head. People admire Aleister Crowley and think that he was this genius, and, oh, he really didn't worship Satan. He was just tapping into the supernatural. And I'm all for, I appreciate every spiritual path, every religious viewpoint, but Aleister Crowley was a dirtbag. And, you know, there's a saying in Christianity that, judge a tree by its fruit. So whatever spiritual path you choose, if you choose one at all, it's supposed to make you a better person, and it's supposed to help you make the world a better place and help you to become an understanding with your place as a person in this life. And so Aleister Crowley is a complete scumbag and didn't teach the principles that are found in Buddhism or in Islam or Christianity or any of the other major religions about being kind, being honest, don't kill, don't steal, don't, you know, sleep with your neighbor's wife. So that's the central theme of all major religions and all the good ones, okay? But Aleister Crowley, in his books, which I own and I've read them with my own eyes, says to kill people and torture them and drink babies' blood and peck the eyes out of Jesus and all this just utter garbage. So I can't see how anybody would have any respect for this man at all.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you know, you look at when I saw this latest thing that I was brought to my attention, Aleister Crowley, the other Loch Ness monster. You know, it seems like it's doing a pretty fair representation of him and his occult practices and his biography. But it's when you get into the last 20 minutes that you start to see that they're about to worship this guy and they're about to whitewash his Luciferianism altogether. And then on top of that, they're going to let you know that he's a good guy, that in fact, you know, he was just, you know, trying to enlighten himself, and he was really into science and knowledge, and that's what he was worshiping. It wasn't these sex magic rituals that we hear so much about. It wasn't these sacrifices, even though his kids ended up dead under very bizarre circumstances. It wasn't the fact that he bragged all over the place by the medals that he put on his chest that he was a high-level Freemason and a Shriner and had all this esoteric knowledge. No, he was just there to study science and technology, and he was a good man, Mark.
Yes, and he didn't mean anything bad by having one of his lovers have sex with a goat and then slit the throat and then drink the blood. That's totally a normal thing in Aleister Crowley's world that some people, I don't know where they just kind of gloss over some of his things. And again, he was a heroin addict. He was a drug addict. I mean, the guy was completely worthless. And yeah, the sex rituals are very, very strange. I actually have a chapter on sex magic in the Illuminati Facts and Fiction, and we can maybe get into that. It is some of the most bizarre things that you can really get into, but it also kind of makes you understand why some of these weirdos do what they do, especially particularly the Bohemian Grove. You're familiar, Jason. I know some of the audience is familiar with some of the allegations about snuff films and the child molestation in the Bohemian Grove back in the 1980s. Mm-hmm. And so when I was new to this, and I'm sure many people out there are still, you look at this and you say, oh, why would somebody do something so sick? You know, I could understand being greedy and you know, wanting to make a lot of money and living the high life. That I'm sure we can all wrap our mind around. Perhaps some people can even understand their quest for some sort of supernatural guidance and knowledge through strange rituals. But when those rituals cross the line of morality into harming an innocent person, especially a child, it's very unsettling, and it's very hard to understand why it is that they would do that. And I will tell you why it is that they do that, because they believe that through sexual arousal that the human mind can tap into some sort of supernatural forces, and so they believe like you ever, you heard you talking earlier, many people are familiar with the DVD called The Secret, and it's this idea that, you know, kind of what you think about and focus on sort of manifests itself into your own physical reality, which there, of course, there actually is some truth to that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not 100% like the DVD says, but there certainly is some principles like that at work. And even Jesus talked about it. He, you know, made a reference, if you believe that the tree will move and you tell it to move, it'll move. And so that kind of goes along with this. And so the Illuminati sort of believes that, that whatever they focus their mind on, that, that it's going to manifest itself into the three-dimensional reality. And so they supposedly have the sort of the user's manual for how to do it. It's like for us, when we have something strange like that happen, it's kind of like a child just playing around with a remote control, and channels are changing and things kind of happen, but you don't know exactly how to use it. So the Illuminati has, or they believe that they have, sort of the way to do that, to use your own mind to tap into the physical reality and to manifest yourself in a sort of a supernatural way. And they believe that a way to do that sort of on steroids is through sex magic, through these bizarre rituals involving sexual acts, but then not only sexual acts, and I'm sorry that I have to say this, but this is what they believe. They believe that by combining the sexual rituals with something as horrific as raping a child, that is sort of gives their metaphysical, magical power a steroidal boost. And so that's...
That they're literally harnessing their life force for these magical purposes.
Yes, because life and death are then mixed, because it's the sexual arousal is the life. At the point of an orgasm, the particular thing will happen, but then they will murder the child. And through the horrific act of sexual abuse, it sort of unlocks certain things in the mind. And again, I don't know if this is true. It very well may be true. And even if it is, it is no excuse for them to be doing that. It's like you could very well go and point a gun at somebody and tell them to give you your money, and they're going to do what you say. It works. It's a principle that works, but you don't do that. So it's sort of like, you know, it's steroids. If you want to build a healthy body, you go to the gym and you work out. You don't shoot steroids, but some people do, and they get these astronomical results that you couldn't get if you just did it the normal way. But then, like anything in life, because I believe God has created a balance, that when you break the rules, you're going to ultimately end up falling in the end and paying, just like Aleister Crowley did. He was a worthless, degenerate drug addict that got STDs from prostitutes. And so, you know, if that's the kind of enlightenment that you're searching for, you know, go worship Aleister Crowley.
On the other side,
I would rather choose somebody else.
I agree with you there. In the final segment, on the other side with you, Mark, I want to talk about this one chapter that you have in here. Why are the Jews always to blame? And I think that's an important thing to talk about, especially in light of the things that have been going on this program. It's the InfoWarrior with Jason Burmis, PrisonPlanet.tv, InfoWars.com. Final segment of the Info Warrior. And you know, Mark, sometimes even on this program, I'll get somebody calling in who wants to blame the Jews for everything. And you know, you have those people that really buy into that, and then you also have this racist faction that just hates everybody that's non-white. You know, why don't we go into that? Why are the Jews always blamed?
There's a couple different reasons. If you go back in time, way back when the Catholic Church was in control, the Catholic Church prevented usury or lending money at interest, okay? And so since the Jewish people were not Christians, they didn't abide by those rules, so they would lend money to people at interest. They became known as, you know, the money changers, and it's a good business, obviously. You make a lot of money, okay? So that, dating back to ancient times, there's kind of been in Europe sort of a kind of almost a hatred for them because they charged a lot of interest for the money, and it was kind of making money off of people without
providing any service,
working.
Yeah.
But it's not fair to blame, you know, all Jews for the New World Order problem, and or all whites or all blacks, as it is to say that all you know, all Asian people like to eat rice. I mean, so. There's some racist connotations that are, again, very strange, and some of these people don't even know that they're feeding into the New World Order, because, like Adolf Hitler and all these people, the reason why Hitler hated the Jews so much is because Hitler thought that the white people, the Aryans, were the holy ones, so to speak. And now, you know, you have the Jews, which are, you know, supposedly God's chosen people, and back in the Bible, you know, God chose that tribe, that race of people to kind of spread this new message to. So you have Hitler and his Aryan white power philosophy saying, no, the Jews aren't, you know, God's chosen people, that the Aryans are God's chosen people, and the white people are descended from the gods, and it's the Jews and the non-whites that are holding back the, you know, the Aryan supermen from achieving their godhood. And, you know, we have documents like the Protocols of the Elders of Zion, which were released back in the early 1900s, which are a fraud. I mean, there's elements of truth in there, but it certainly wasn't written from, you know, some secret group of Jews. And if anybody actually reads the Protocols of the Elders of Zion, it's way overblown. I mean, whoever wrote it purposely to demonize the Jews, and nobody that's going to write a document like that is going to make references like they make in there. So the protocols of this document that were released that supposedly showed that the Jews had this, you know, secret group, and they had their plans for world domination, and, you know, really what it was a regurgitation of the Illuminati writings, because the Illuminati writings were released in the late 1700s. And were widely known by people, and so somebody regurgitated these as a reference to here's evidence that the Jews are in control of everything. And so there's certain elements ingrained into certain cultures that, so some stereotypes have a grain of truth, okay? I mean, I know a lot of Asian people that are really good at technology, and so I'm not racist when I call up my friend from China and I ask him a computer question, because he would know, okay? And so in the Jewish culture, they've lended themselves to banking and business and to
MarkDice.com is the website. Thank you so much for joining us. The new book is The Illuminati Facts and Fiction. I will be back Monday, folks. We got Patrice O'Neill and Lindsay Williams coming up in the next 2 days. Thanks for joining me. It's the Info Warrior.